case number five, the evidence case number four under advice. Multi versus Madruski.
May it please the court, Ms. Griffin, and Mr. Bowman. I'm Karen Daniel, Bloom Legal Clinic, Northwestern University School of Law, appearing on behalf of Paul Madruski. Mr. Madruski filed a habeas petition one day late in the district court. He sought equitable tolling of the statute of limitations based on his attorney's mental incapacity. The district court ruled that even were that the case, that the attorney had become incapacitated, equitable tolling would not be justified. The district court was in error. We're seeking a remand for a factual determination of that issue. There's no dispute that there is a doctrine of equitable tolling. The district court and respondent would interpret that doctrine so narrowly that even if an attorney walking to the courthouse with the petition in his briefcase on his way to initiate a lawsuit on the filing deadline were hit by a bus, equitable tolling would not lie.
Isn't that an episode of negligence? Why would any responsible attorney attempt to file in person on the filing deadline?
Having done it myself, I see nothing irresponsible about that. I think the only reason
the problem
why
with doing it is that if any small thing goes wrong, like a traffic jam, much more likely than being hit by a bus. But something like a traffic jam, you don't get there by the close of business, your client loses the case.
Well,
I just can't imagine that behavior.
This wasn't a traffic jam, though, and perhaps a traffic jam might present a different...
I think you basically described it as a mental traffic jam.
I think it would be aptly described as being hit by a psychological bus.
Although I don't understand why somebody who says he could prepare the document and call the petitioner's mother and put it in the mail couldn't have called Cannonball Delivery Service.
Your Honor, those are all issues of fact that need to be determined by the district court.
The reason why I opened this line of inquiry is I don't understand why this is not just the kind. This is an example of the kind of thing you can go wrong if you wait till the very last instant to file. And my basic query is, why isn't this just a demonstration that it's negligent to wait till the very last instant to file?
Because if
the smallest thing goes wrong, poof, your client's claim goes up in smoke.
If, in fact, it turns out that the attorney was incapacitated, was mentally incapacitated, then that's the reason why he didn't file, not because some little thing went wrong. It was because he became incapable of filing.
Well, his claim seems to be that he was perfectly capable of preparing the document and putting it in the mail. He just wasn't capable of physically appearing in the clerk's office. And that's the basis of my question, why didn't he call Cannonball? But if that's the nature of his disability, had he proceeded one day earlier to put it in the mail, everything would have been fine.
One can always proceed one day earlier, but again, the reason that he didn't file on time, assuming that he had this incapacity, was not out of negligence. It was because he became incapable, and we must assume that had he not become incapable, he would have filed.
You're not dealing with my question. One, you're taking the world as given. It's 4:55 p.m. on the filing day, and suddenly the attorney becomes incapable. That just demonstrates that it was negligent for this man not to file earlier.
Well, Your Honor,
you can't take everything as given up to 4:55 p.m. on the filing day.
I think perhaps the logical extension of Your Honor's argument might be that one should always file on the first filing date.
That's ridiculous. He had a whole year to file, didn't he?
He had a whole year to file.
A whole year, 365 days. And he waited till the last hour.
Your Honor, had he not...
We're just asking for a logical explanation. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Well, had he not become incapacitated...
For a year?
He would have filed.
He wasn't incapacitated during the year. He outlined the other things that he had done during the year. Other cases he'd worked on.
If he...
He just cast this
one
aside.
If he had filed on the last day, if he'd successfully filed, he would not have been negligent.
What
the reason he didn't file was not out of negligence, it was because he became incapable.
What did his mother say about her calls to the office?
During the course of the preceding
year? Yes, during the course of the year.
There were various conversations. Some calls were not returned. There were conversations.
They weren't returned, and he didn't have time right at this time, or he wasn't available. He didn't return calls.
Your Honor, the district court found that under the circumstances as set forth in what I must say were hastily prepared affidavits in the 10 days in which we had to prepare them, that the evidence before her did not show any lack of diligence on the part of the Madrowski family in pursuing their claims, even with this attorney. There was no indication that this attorney was on the brink of becoming mentally incapacitated. In fact, every indication that he gave to the family was that he would file on time, that he intended to file on time, even as late as the filing deadline itself. When she spoke to him, he said, "I will get that petition to court," and it was not negligence that prevented that.
Has Mr. Sanders surrendered his membership in the bar? An
attorney
who proclaims himself mentally incompetent and unable to serve his client's interests should not be continuing to represent clients.
Your Honor, I could not agree more, and while this is not contained in the record, I don't know his bar status. I do know he's not currently practicing law, and perhaps that just points out why this is exactly the type of case that cries out for equitable tolling. This is an extraordinary case where you have an attorney who is basically forced by circumstances to put his license on the line to explain what happened in this case. This is not, his allegations are not something to be taken lightly. No practicing attorney would possibly come forward and say, "I had a mental breakdown and that's why I dropped the ball in my client's case," unless it were true.
Unfortunately, counsel, we have a lot of lawyers who come forward and say, basically, "I had a brain seizure. I didn't do the following thing for my defendant, therefore there should be a new trial or a new proceeding. But I'm fine now, so, you know, I will continue going on representing people." It's all too common.
Frankly, Your Honor, what I find common are allegations that the attorney calculated the deadline wrong.
Do you have any psychiatric evaluation to back up your theory?
Your Honor,
no.
Do
you have any psychiatric analysis of this man that will back up your theory that he was suffering from some mental illness?
If there's a hearing?
No, do you have it now?
We don't have it now, Your Honor.
Why are you bringing it into the court when you don't even have the evidence to back up your theory?
We have his affidavit. Your Honor, the petition was dismissed on July 21st of 2001. We had 10 days. Mr. Madrowski, we had less than 10 days. Mr. Madrowski had 10 days to come in and seek reconsideration of the dismissal of that petition. That was not enough time to bring in medical evidence.
365 days to file it when he came up with this idea that he was mentally ill and has nothing to substantiate it at all.
Your Honor, the district court was perfectly willing to hold the factual hearing to determine whether or not this, in fact, was a bona fide mental illness. The affidavit raised the issue of mental incapacity. All we're seeking from this court is a declaration that should the facts establish a bona fide mental incapacity on the part of Attorney Sanders, that could be a valid basis for equitable tolling. The district court thought not, and therefore didn't even enter into the factual inquiry. All we're asking is that the district court be given the go-ahead to do just that.
Did he give the excuse that he was working on a death penalty case?
Your Honor,
and that he worked on that death penalty case and he lost it, and that turned him into a tailspin?
A mental illness, Your Honor.
He's got more excuses than I've ever heard.
A mental illness is not an excuse. It can be, as the district court recognized, it can be every bit as debilitating as being hit by a bus. And all we're asking is the chance to persuade the district court that that's what happened here. Thank you.
Right. quite confident.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Colleen Griffin with the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondent in this case. The petitioner filed his habeas corpus petition one day past the one-year statute of limitations period for filing his habeas petition. He had 365 days to file, and he filed it on the 366th day. The petitioner asked the district court to apply the doctrine of equitable tolling on the basis that on that last day he had to file, he became mentally incapacitated and was unable to do so. The district court found that there was no principal distinction between attorney negligence and what the petitioner was alleging in this instance, and that a temporarily incapacitated attorney on the very last day of filing that supposedly prevented him from filing on that day was not a valid basis for equitable tolling. The respondent is asking this court to affirm the district's court finding that the petition in this case was filed late. Excuse me. This court's cases have set forth that equitable tolling is an extraordinary remedy which is typically applied sparingly. The petitioner agrees that the elements needed to apply the doctrine of equitable tolling are the existence of an extraordinary circumstance that prevented the petitioner from timely filing his lawsuit and due diligence by the petitioner in pursuing his claim. However, what petitioner is asking this court is to do away with the requirement that there's an extraordinary circumstance that actually prevented the petitioner himself from filing. The reason that this court finds that attorney negligence is not a basis for equitable tolling is that it's simply not an extraordinary circumstance which prevents the petitioner himself from filing on time. It's his burden, and whatever his attorney does that prevents the attorney from not filing on time is attributable to the petitioner. The petitioner offers absolutely no legal basis for this court to make a distinction between attorney negligence and what happened in this case.
Actually, when the petition was filed, it didn't have a filing fee or a request for waiver of the fee, did it?
No, it did not. And I think that the district court originally sent it back to ask the attorney and to add the filing fee, and it was deficient in numerous ways, and it asked the attorney to explain why it should be allowed to be filed late, and that was a different reason than this reason given now in rehearing.
But he filed an amended petition at some time later.
I think originally the attorney said he had called the court and was told that the mailbox rule would apply to him, and then when Judge Manning said that was not a basis for equitable tolling because it was just negligence, they resubmitted these affidavits that now he was mentally incapacitated on the last day and was unable to file.
But in the meantime, before that was done, wasn't there an amended petition filed?
Yes, because Judge Manning had indicated it was deficient, so they amended the petition.
They meaning the original lawyer?
Correct. While the petitioner offers no legal basis for this court to distinguish between attorney negligence and alleged last-minute mental incapacitation, they did in their brief offer some factual distinctions, like the petitioner can check attorney's negligence or disciplinary.
Did the allegations of mental incapacity occur after the amended petition was filed or before?
I don't know if it was an amended petition. I believe it might have been filed on the same date that Judge Manning asked the attorney to file the filing fee and another petition and to also then indicate why it should be allowed to be filed late. Then when Judge Manning dismissed the petition as being untimely filed, the new attorneys filed a motion to reconsider the finding of no equitable tolling on a different basis.
Well, I guess my question is, there was the filing a day late, it was filed a day late. At some point thereafter, an amended petition or substitute petition was filed. Isn't that correct? That had the appropriate, in other words, it was at least on its face, an appropriate petition.
Of the valid claims, and, yes, and filing fee.
When did this claim of incapacity occur? Was it before that was filed or after?
After that was filed, I believe. Excuse me. The petitioner suggests that this court should find a distinction between alleged mental incapacity on the part of a petitioner's attorney and attorney negligence, contending that a petitioner can check to see if his attorney's negligent by checking his disciplinary records, etc., to see if he's a negligent attorney, and that could put him on notice that his attorney might file the petition late, and there's no way of finding out if your attorney is mentally unstable. But all this goes back to the petitioner's problem with this supposed last-minute incapacitation, and that should somehow be viewed differently than attorney negligence. However, as the district court pointed out, this distinction is entirely meaningless. Again, Judge Manning used the example of the attorney who puts the habeas petition in his briefcase and is going to court on the last day and forgets to file it and doesn't make it on time. The distinction is totally meaningless. In either event, the petitioner is no less prevented from filing if his attorney is negligent on the last day or if he becomes mentally incapacitated on the last day. There's simply no legal basis for this court to make a distinction between the two situations, and the respondent would ask this court to affirm the district court's finding that this petition was untimely filed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
In response to Judge Kaney's inquiry, the allegation of mental incompetence was filed after the amended petition had been dismissed and Mr. Modrowski's family obtained substitute counsel. And I'd like to point out that the amended petition was really nothing much more than a refiling of the initial petition and the initial claim.
It did fill in some blanks that weren't there before.
Exactly. But
there were 500 paragraphs that filled in, didn't it?
I don't think that 500 different new paragraphs.
Well, he didn't sign the initial petition. He did not put any exhibits in. He didn't file it on time. And what else did he do?
Well, he rectified, the court instructed him which
he filed it
to rectify.
over a month later, July 5th, when it was due July 1st, June 1st. Isn't that true?
That's when the amended petition was filed, Your Honor. And I just would also like to point out that we don't really know that the mental incapacity or when exactly it arose. We don't know that it arose.
I'm surprised that Northwestern University would bring in a petition like this and not have the person examined first. Say, Your Honor, this man is mentally incapacitated and in all probability has been for some time.
Well, Your Honor, as I mentioned, we had less than 10 days to prepare our filings in this case. And we did the best we could. And Judge Manning was satisfied that we had raised the issue of mental incompetence. And she would have held a hearing had she thought that establishing mental incompetence would justify equitable tolling. If Your Honors would so instruct Judge Manning, then we can go ahead and have that hearing and we will bring in the necessary evidence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, kindly. We will take the case under advisement.